come with me?
I can't. I'm going to listen to the 20 megabyte podcast.
You come with me.
Me come with you?
Yes.
Me come with you. It's tempting.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 350. I'm Adam, and I haven't got a quote because I completely forgot to get one. And here's Andy Nunney.
Hang on, I've got to find my quote now because you speak me to it. Hang on a second. It just shows you don't listen to a single word I say.
Welcome to my world. Mary Lang.
I'm fine. Dead, of course, but fine.
Debbie Melrose with a needle in her hand.
Now, Debbie, having stabbed yourself, we're now
and Kirby Bartlett's alone and some pussies.
I tell you that nobody and nothing can stop me now.
Yes.
Complete with air punch.
Eventually, we've got round to doing a review of The Time Monster and back on the journey. Now, we have been away for a while, so I hope everybody's all right. Deb seems to have lost about 10 stone in weight, but it's only round her head. Everybody else looks
fine. What, you say she's fat elsewhere, is that what
you're
saying, Adam?
No, I was saying that she had about 10 stone a hair cut away. And Kirby's got distracted, as per usual, by the trying to find cats within his man shed. Or what do they call it? Man cave. That's it,
this
man
is a
cave.
Man cave. Yeah. No, this is a fan cave. No. Or the Who cave.
Which is still a man cave. I've got a new man cave, which viewers may see parts of on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. It's going to be very difficult for me to keep track of who's watching, so if I don't keep on saying hello, listener, I apologise, because I've got so many windows open, and that sounds like a child.
Yeah. Must be very drafty, then.
What's very drafty?
If you've got so many windows open.
Very good.
Get
it. See, Kirby, that's how it's supposed to be done. He's gone all quiet. Okay.
I've got another visitor here. Come here.
Oh, good grief.
Come on.
It really works well in audio presentations, you picking up cats every 5 seconds. It'd be funny if it's...
This is midnight.
Yeah, we know. We've met midnight on several occasions. I wish one of them would just turn around and give him a swipe around the face. Right. Let's go on with the Time Monster. The Time Monster begins with a title sequence. And and some explosions, some stock footage of some volcanic eruptions.
Yeah, I must say, I put the DVD on and thought, hang on, have I put Inferno on by mistake?
Yes. But it's actually the Doctor having a bit of a nightmare.
Pasta.
Yes.
That footage is the Mediterranean volcanic island of Stromboli from the 1958 film The Rendezvous of the Devil, which I'm not going to try and pronounce it in French.
Thank you for that.
I can't.
I will say that I have been listening to back episodes of the 20 megabyte podcast, and I know that my only fault on this show is not anticipating Kirby's interruptions. Right. Yeah, so
I can completely stop interrupting if you wish.
Be quiet.
No chance. No way.
Really, I don't know if you can control yourself.
Phone's ringing, Mary.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. She's probably got a call.
It's probably Missy calling.
No, I'm on call today, so that could have been.
Ooh.
Yes.
Oh, well, now we're going to be really worried every time the phone rings now.
Mm. Yeah, every time the phone rings, right.
So, yes, the Doctor has a bit of a nightmare. But what we'll say about his Barnet in this episode is it's absolutely pristine. It doesn't get a hair out of place for the whole story. And it starts like this and carries on for 6 episodes. Yeah, he has a bit of a... He needs a couple of tablets, a couple of Nurofens to get his head together. So Joe gives him a cup of tea. Yeah,
I love the gag with the tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the background is one of those very old Macs, or at least it looks like it. We won't talk about that. It's not really fundamental to the storyline, but it does rather catch your eye, the old computer in the corner. And also the rather attractive spiral staircase to nowhere, which is also part of the set.
How could a staircase be attractive?
A what?
I was being slightly ironic.
Very, nice. I love them.
Yeah, they're ones that excite the imagination.
They're not much of a fall down.
Here's a question. In medieval castles, why do spiral staircases always go clockwise?
Is there a joke attached to this?
No. It's actually a serious question. Why were spiral staircases in medieval castles built clockwise?
I'm not being funny, but wouldn't they only be would they only be clockwise depending on which way you're walking around them, whether you're walking up and down, up or down?
Oh, like going up,
It depends on the society, because there was one society that specifically taught themselves to. I can't talk over the child.
No, the reason is because...
Wait.
Well, I'm just listening to the fire engine go by.
There was one society that taught themselves to sword fight with the other, with their left hand.
Kirby, I think you know the answer, don't you, Kirby?
Yes, it's fighting.
The point is, most people are right-handed, so defending is easier to attack, to defend with your right hand. If you're coming up the stairs and it's on, you've got to go like that. So that's why it makes it easy to defend, because most people are right-handed. So Kirby actually got it.
Wow, the engineering of spiral staircases. Anyway, so the Doctor's... the Doctor's been having a few nightmares, probably slightly related to the Kronos thing, but nevertheless, Joe wears a very lovely pair of extremely short... Well, no, it's actually a sort of woolly dress, isn't it? Anyway, she has to sit in a position where you want to rewind... the tape to see if you actually do see anything when she sits on the side.
She does that in a lot of episodes. Yeah. Here
when she sits on the side of the desk, it's a very low camera angle, just in case.
Yeah. For goodness sake, if you want to go see Casey Manning what she's got, it's not...
Yes, we know. We've already had Paul last week going on about that.
I love his story about the signing the picture. Yeah.
He told that story to me in the pub in Bembridge many years ago, but it's quite a good one to repeat.
I was on the train when I heard that, and people thought he was having hysterics.
I did actually make me Google the pictures actually after that, which were quite underwhelming, to be fair. What? Anyway, yeah. There's also, I noticed, a very conveniently placed sort of couch for the Doctor and Joe to cuddle up on in quieter moments. Oh dear, Mary's phone's gone again, and now we need to worry again.
They don't call my cell phone. That's my daughter on the cell phone.
Oh, that's good. Right, so meanwhile, we cut to a lab. They do like labs in 1970s Doctor Who, and the Master in a white coat pretending to be a professor.
Professor Thassel, whatever it is. Master.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because we're not doing quiz on this today.
Why does the Master pick names that obviously...
That sound like Master.
...who he is?
Yes.
Now, why does he do it? I mean, it's fairly obvious. I think anyone who picks it will think, oh my God, it's the Master.
I think it's because he's very obsessed with who he is. I think he has to have something.
Why was his name Razor in the last episode that we saw?
Well, somebody will have to look up. Maybe Razor is Master in a different language. Welsh, maybe. I don't know. Anyway. We've got a woman with a very 1972 hairstyle. Sorry, very 1972 hairstyle. Rather typical of the time. And Captain Yates makes his only appearance of the story as well in episode one. Oh no, he does show up in episode two and three.
No, he shows up with
he does get done, nearly done in, doesn't he? Sorry, I do forget. That's a while since I watched this episode, actually.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Somebody's going to have to remind me how the Doctor ended up going to the facility where they were doing these experiments.
Because of his machine that goes ping, basically.
Right, the machine that... The machine that only turns on when you pull the trigger.
Oh, okay.
It's got a switch on the bottom. You can see Joe activate it several times.
Okay, well, the Master has sort of made friends similarly to...
By the way, this is my new toy, by the way.
Amazon.
It's an book Amazon thingy. Fire 8.
Yeah, I thought it might be.
Is it Kindle?
8. Huh? No, it's Amazon Fire. It does do Kindle, though.
The Fire.
Oh. Mm. Well, thank you for reminding me. I've got to charge my Kindle before I go away this week.
Okay. Anyway, the Master, as per usual, like he did in the Sea Devils, has made friends with a pompous chap. But he tries to sort of hypnotise him. and succeeds. Somebody just messaged me. Who was that?
That's
oh, I got distracted here. Oh God, it's my customer for tomorrow saying, "Am I still available?" Do apologise. Just need to answer this message.
Every time he does the hypnosis thing, Tom was watching a bit with me, and all he could point out was the bit in Austin Powers when he's doing the hypnosis.
What? I've never seen Austin Powers. Never seen Austin Powers. I wish I had, but I haven't. So anyway, there
it's
I'm doing it.
It's been a long time since I've seen Austin Powers.
Well, some listeners will get the reference and laugh heartily, I'm sure.
Anyway, I will say that the professor, Stephen, isn't it? Stephen, the professor. They later on say
Stuart.
He's 20... Oh, Stuart. Nearly got it right. I got that bit right, which is quite good.
Stuart Hyde.
Yeah. He's supposed to be 25, this chap. I would have been gutted if I looked like that when I was 25. His tash looks like it's been stuck on as well.
It's a real porn star tash.
He does actually. Thank you, Kirby. Kirby's now showing me on his Amazon Fire thingamajig.
Well, I'm meant to laugh at that is we can still hear Kirby. He's not going to share. That's still
he's very easily entertained, hence he's a big fan of this show.
The object, yeah.
Yeah. I had the new computer by the last time we were podcasting. Right?
Hello, Zach. Hello. Sorry, just saying hello to Stormageddon. Hello, Zach. I know he's trying to punch me.
I've got a new computer. I've got a giant monitor. I've got a new microphone and a new Fire tablet. So,
Kirby.
Windfall.
Yes.
This is a six-part
computer
story
stop.
We're trying to get.
Computer,
oh, good grief.
I'd like to get to bed before midnight, Kirby. I've got a new job to start tomorrow, Kirby. I'd like to get to bed before midnight, please.
Yes.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Deb has actually made the bed. Deb made the bed this evening, which means I don't have to get up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. So I'd like to get a little bit of sleep tonight. And it's only wet.
I have to stay up until 11:30 to watch the new episode of Rick and Morty.
It's not a competition. Oh, anyway, yeah. Right. Moving back.
What is Rick and Morty?
Oh, it's brilliant. You've got to catch it.
It's great.
What channel is it on?
Cartoon Network, Adult Swim.
Yeah. Splendid. Can we get on?
Right.
Okay. Right, so yeah, they're obviously making a, and then some peeping Tom climbs the ladder while they're doing these experiments.
So it's Terry Walsh.
Terry Walsh and peeping Tom as a peep through the window.
Yes.
And that reminds me a little bit of Fawlty Towers, obviously, but obviously Fawlty Towers made a little bit afterwards, but, and then.
Oh, the info text says that Stuart's mustache is false.
Thought it might be.
No, put those down, Zach. No, don't play any matches.
So yeah, they set this they've got this crystal thing and they set the experiment going and that makes Terry Walsh fall off his ladder. I think he's okay though. I think if he really
still breathing,
it's Terry Walsh. It's because it's Terry Walsh. He probably survived that fall. Most normal people would have injured themselves quite badly.
They say he's still breathing, and that's the last we saw of him.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he was okay, essentially. So the master has got a plan. It's quite clear that he's trying to summon Azul. That was Damon.
That's a demon, that is.
Well, it's a similar sort of setup, isn't it? Kronos. And the doctor, meanwhile, travels to the facility via a very fast Bessie.
Well, the thing is, I thought at that point that Joe was shocked by how fast Bessie had gone.
That's right.
She was frozen in time.
I thought she was
petrified from the fact that Bessie went really quickly there. But no, it's the time thing. That was a really bad way of sort of doing it, was making her absolutely terrified and just frozen.
Because her hair was still blowing, that's the problem. She was frozen, but her hair still kept popping backwards and forwards.
Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that. Why didn't I notice that? It's terrible.
Yeah, so I just thought she was terrified.
But
I quite like the fact that the doctor talks about the inertial dampeners, which are inside Bessie to stop them from getting injured by going so fast. Never mind the little kiddies and animals that might wander in front of Bessie as she's travelling.
But the doctor's reflexes are good enough that he would avoid them.
Yeah, ten times quicker, isn't he?
If you say so.
Well, that's
what.
No, he said so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Ding.
Yeah. So it's only that customer's probably saying yes. Okay, I'll see you at half past 12. Right. Oh, oh yeah, dear. Sorry. Episode one begins with the master doing his. Come.
In episode two.
Can I ask why episode one was like only 15 minutes long?
It was actually 25
minutes long, Debbie. Exactly 25 minutes. Well, 7 seconds. Were you watching a sort of cut down version that was on some channel?
I bought it off of iTunes. I bought the whole thing because, you know, they're running the classic thing. And it was only 15 minutes long, the first episode.
Well, I'd have a word with iTunes if I were you.
The DVD is 25 minutes and 6 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'd write a snotty email to
iTunes and say, oh, Rob.
Yeah, snotty email to iTunes forthwith. All right. Anyways, what on earth is that noise in the background at the nunny household?
Zach, sorry, Zach.
What's he up to?
He's playing with two of my cricketers.
Oh, right, okay.
I beg your pardon. Good Lord.
No, don't! Leave that one up.
I'll leave it in a minute, Andy. I'm just,
Let's go.
It seems to have, in episode two, there seems to be a group of people watching the master doing his, and like you say, the doctor runs away from the frozen car with Joe's hair. Oh, she does look a bit dead, actually, doesn't she? With Joe's hair blowing around, which is actually quite amusing now you've pointed that out to me. I wish you hadn't done now, because now every time I watch that, I'm going to be laughing every time I see it. Anyway, right, so they sort of find Stuart looking a bit old. Got a load of plastic stuck to his face. No. The makeup isn't that bad, is it, for the time, I have to say.
It's not at all.
It reminds me a bit of the makeup from a Star Trek story called The Deadly Years, where all the cast got made up to be looking old. And it's quite ironic that Kirk is so old in that story, but younger than he is now, as William Shatner is now, and looks completely different. There you go. Yes,
the
I know.
Wrinkles were built up with mortician's wax and tissues soaked in honey.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
Oh, I was going to ask, actually, because it did look so good for a special effect.
Yeah, see, the BBC makeup artists know what they're doing, don't they? And they actually, to be fair... Yeah, sorry.
Andy.
Yeah?
Could you mute your microphone so we can hear everyone else?
No, sorry, it's Zach, that is, yeah, okay.
Oh, bless. I hope you can still... Nod if you can still hear us, Andy. Yep. Anyway, moving on. Right, so what did we get up to? Oh, yeah, so what?
I'll be communicating via sign language and interpretive dance.
I thought that he acted the part quite well, the actor who played Stuart, you know, when he...
I like his Elton John poster.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I never noticed that. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, he's got an Elton John.
I've come back on me. I actually thought that I've got that noted out. I thought it'd be a quiz question. He said there's no quiz.
I wouldn't have noticed that. Maybe I'd heard. If I had actually been looking for quiz questions, I might have noticed that, but I wasn't. I was just enjoying the story.
It's from the 1971 album Madman Across the Water.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kirby. Right, so meanwhile, it's interesting to see Captain Yates doing a bit of desk work. Don't often see him doing that. And not only is he doing desk work, he's actually operating the unit switchboard. And the Brigadier still has his ridiculously long antenna radio thingy. So obviously technology hasn't moved far enough forward for UNIT just yet. And
well, that's the same antenna, that same radio they've been using since the invasion.
I know.
Possibly since earlier than that.
I know.
I first saw it in the invasion.
I was being facetious.
I know, but I was being pedantic.
Okay. So, right. The doctor, meanwhile, has made his way to the lab and realizes what they're doing in the lab is having some sort of effect on local time, basically freezing everybody outside the lab within a certain circumference. And so Benton is with he's with lady with the funny hair and the doctor. The crystal is sat on the thingy, wherever it is, where it sits, with a sign behind it saying warning radiation or something, isn't it? Yeah. So they're stood really nicely close to something that says it's radioactive. So, okay, didn't think that one through properly. And then we see a little flash to what we find out later is Atlantis and that little sidekick of the master. I can't remember his name. What was the master's little sidekick for the story? Bloke who wore the red robes.
High priest.
High priest.
The high priest. What's his name?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I've got it down here somewhere.
Oh, dear. I'll see if I can get the subtitles up.
Crassus? Crassius? Something like that?
Crassius.
Yeah, he was Crassus. Crassus. Crassus.
His last name is Eccles. I wonder if he knows a blue bottle.
Anyway, moving on. Master is in another part of the building, scheming with his little sort of friend who,
he's brought through time. Yeah.
His bureautic friends. He hasn't brought the other chap through time yet. He hasn't arrived.
Oh, Percival.
Percival, was it? And I think isn't Benton given the job of looking after or staying behind, making sure everything stays. Because he was going on holiday, wasn't he?
Yeah,
Benton.
Yeah,
he was.
Master.
Yes.
Master. The location, which is Shalliford Park in Berkshire.
Mm. Berkshire.
Berkshire. Berkshire. Living Americans.
Yeah.
Berkshire, please. Berkshire.
Anyway, I'm compiling a list of words Americans can't say properly. That's a new one.
the clock tower, the production team actually took the time to reset the clock for different scenes.
Oh, that's rather good, right. Isn't it?
Shame we didn't ask this.
Yeah. I did. I've got it all written down.
Have you? Nice one.
Oh my gosh.
Nice one, Andy. Anyway, what I forgot to mention was...
Andy wins the quiz.
Sure. What I forgot to mention was that Benton sort of clambered across the building to get in through the window and then point his gun at the master.
I like the fact that he was onto it from the beginning as well. You're not supposed to be there, sir, when the master does his voice.
And then his little friend arrives. I think.
Yeah.
His little friend arrives.
Now, a lot of the way Benton works out, it wasn't the Brigadier, because he wouldn't call Dear Fella. But yet, late, when the bomb landed, a bit late on the convoy, it was Yates, can you hear me, Mike? Which I thought
You could actually see that he was really worried about, which I suppose you'd call him his friend, wouldn't you, really? Even though he's his commanding
officer. I think there's a lot of mutual respect between, in unit, between all of them.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever heard the Brig call him. I mean, I've always heard him call Mike Yates Mike several times.
No, I don't think the Brig called him Mike, only on that occasion when he thought he was about to die.
He's called him it a couple of times.
Has he?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I apologise.
I think in the Demons he called him Mike once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
So I think it's the sort of thing, me with my police background, that there are times when your superior officers will call you by your first name as well as PC or Sergeant whatever.
Yeah.
It just shows respect to the house. Yeah,
I mean, I thought that was quite a good touch, like you say. And that was a really good scene as well, really quite gripping, because obviously if you're watching Doctor Who as it's supposed to air, you don't really get the spoilers. In those days, there weren't sort of spoilers, so you didn't know that they might have decided to kill off the character for that episode, and so it was quite a good little cliffhanger. So that was episode 2. Episode 3... something's emerging. That's what it was. It was a strange, rather cute little special effect.
Remember a few weeks ago when I made a comment about that in the being on the menu? Mm. I was going, "What the heck is that?"
What I liked about that special effect was,
told you it was the Time Monster, but you didn't believe me.
I didn't believe you.
when they cut to the back view of the master's little buddy. The little radiations were going in a different direction, and it was like it was behind him. So they did really, really well there to give the impression that little sort of starry effect was actually going on behind him in the room. So that was quite good and consistent with the storyline. So, yes, the master quickly makes friends with this chap. There is a point in which Stuart asks the Doctor if he's stuck being an old man, being at the age of 25, etc., etc. And I think he does get carted away for a bit, because I see you see him in a wheelchair being sort of put in the back of an ambulance just when the next...
they took him to his own room, didn't they? He's
never
went to the hospital.
That's
his room.
Yeah. Right. Well, they were wheeling him into the back of the ambulance just when the next round of freezing time
Yeah, but that's when he then time got reversed. He was about to be 25, didn't he?
Nobody commented on that.
No,
yeah. He's back at 25.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
One of my quotes was going to be, you better find out about my old age pension.
Well, you better
start being.
I mean,
you're looking a little bit now, aren't you, mate? Ooh, Andy. Don't upset him.
Bro, I've got 15 years to go till mine.
Oh, that made the dog snore. So, yes. We have a few more little cutbacks to filmed versions of Atlantis with Campo Riposte. Oh, sorry, that was a flash forward.
Yes,
in the
it is. Yeah.
Which is quite ironic because the Doctor actually refers to Campo not in by name, but by talking about the Hermit. He's actually talking about Campo Riposte. And then we see just after that this is later on in the story, that character die. So I thought it would be quite good if the character didn't die and it actually was Campo. But carry on, yes.
You were referring to someone was making fun of Ian Collier not being 25.
Hmm.
He was 29.
Oh, well, there you go. That was me making fun of it.
Yeah. Four years, big difference, yeah.
Yes, Lord Delios is a king, and it was played by the same actor who played Campo Riposte. Actually, he was very good in this story, to be fair. You can see he was a seasoned and very experienced actor, unlike the actor that was playing the hero bloke, I can't remember his blooming name, the love interest for Susan Penhaligon.
Hippias.
He wasn't very good. He just overacted badly.
They all did.
Hair overacted.
Yeah.
So they all did.
All the UNIT friends and scientists are sort of held up in one room, while the Master and his little buddy are sort of in the lab, trying to find a way of summoning Kronos again and whatever. The Doctor makes some little machine that goes ping. Well, it doesn't go ping, but it looks a bit like using a pair of forks and a cork and a wine bottle.
And some tea leaves.
A teacup as well, was it? And
he
spins it around.
Puts the tea on it. The cup.
I won't argue, Deb.
Yes, and he spins it around. And what does it do?
It goes
blue, 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 blue.
And then it blows up, does it not?
That whole scene of him making that thing was all pretty much added in there at the last minute because they needed to extend this episode.
Oh.
So they did not originally have that. So they were kind of making that up as they went along. And it looks like it, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes.
Only slightly.
They did take the time to have him put together the makeshift version, and then they took it down and they glued pieces of it together and put the explosives on it.
Yeah.
And by the way, that wine is rubbish. Don't bother
drinking it. Cheers, Andy. Anyway, where'd I get out? I forgot what I was going to say now. I'll have to go back a bit now. So the Doctor wants his TARDIS. So they're shipping his TARDIS over with a rather not very obvious UNIT convoy.
I know I'm stepping forward a little bit, but the bit when the TARDIS is on its side and you can see its rollers and everything was slightly disappointing.
Debbie.
What?
This is 1971 this was filmed in.
Pointed it out.
It was shown in 1972.
Okay, that makes Ian Collier 38, not 39.
You said 29.
I'm 28.
For goodness sake, get yourself.
Are you going to get the number right at some point, Kirby? It's not. Yeah. 28.
28.
So he knows 29. 39, 38. We won't know the answer. He's going to say he was right, whatever, because he did mention the right number somewhere along the line. What on earth was that noise?
What was that?
That's my cat Maya, who's part Siamese, and she's
got a bit of a sore throat.
A crazy yowl instead.
Anyway, moving back to the episode, for some reason, a knight in shining armour, a jousting knight, appears and starts charging at Mike Yates and his little team.
It's the Master he's playing. He's pulling things from time to hold them up.
Oh, he is, yes. And then he brings some World War One soldiers as well, doesn't he?
No, they weren't. They were Civil War soldiers.
Oh, it's a Civil War. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. And also, I mean, that whole scene were awful shots. They all were. I mean, the Union soldiers couldn't hit a barn door at 5 paces.
That's just normal.
Why did the master bring that? You know, you thought he wants to get rid of them. Why did he sort of bring some sort of decent soldiers and shoot straight and just blow them away completely?
The doodle bug's a good idea, though.
The knight on horseback was he wasn't injured, but the horse was injured because during the first take, the second lorry hit the horse.
Oh,
that's nice. How'd the horse get on?
The horse was rather shaken up. They waited a little bit. They took the knight to the Basingstoke Hospital for a little bit to have him checked out.
Hmm.
What about the horse?
Yeah, I was worried about the horse.
The horse is obviously fine because we're seeing the second take.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good. Oh, thank God. Okay.
I would imagine by now the horse is pretty dead. That was, like I say, it's like over 40 years ago. Talking about the fact this is over 40 years ago, it's also, and you're talking about the doodlebug thing, it's interesting to note that it was only just over 25 years.
Yeah,
that the doodlebugs were flying prior to this episode was filmed. So it's
the people on the brig and the unit people would actually probably remembered or known of.
Possibly,
it's the way most of them go. That's not, is it? You know that bit. It was quite chilling. That bit. Yeah.
They would recognise it because I'm guessing it's based in the southeast. So in the southeast, they would have actually probably seen her
as children.
Even though my wife is not a Doctor Who fan, I discussed this segment with her because her mother was in Belgium during World War II and was quite familiar with doodlebugs.
They
fired them from France and Belgium, obviously occupied territories, and anyone in the southeast of England, so Kent, Essex, Sussex, Surrey.
By the way, I saw Dunkirk last week. It's fantastic.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Is it quite a cheerful film?
No.
An excellent old comedy, yeah.
Anyway, I prefer not to watch films that upset me. It's a really good reason to watch.
I'll pass on that one.
Anyway, so right, they go back to the story. So the Master is plotting to try. He's trying to stop the TARDIS from being brought to the Doctor. So he's decided that he's going to basically kill the whole of the unit convoy, basically. And at the end of the episode, I'd like you to say that he does get rather worried as the explosion goes off. Fortunately, though, in episode
TARDIS
4.
TARDIS is indestructible.
Yeah, TARDIS is indestructible. Well, so is Mike Yates.
He looks like he's burying his neck in mud, doesn't he?
He's lying on the edge of a trench, which looked like it's part of the epicentre of the explosion. And he's got a couple of little cuts and grazes, and he climbs out of the trench, or is that another soldier? I can't remember now.
I love the way as well. There's like a wheel next to me, like the vehicle's been blown to pieces.
Yeah, but not the people.
Wheel there. You know, it's like some comedy thing. You blow a car apart, and there's a wheel will stay there beside you.
I tell you what, I forgot to mention was I was quite impressed with the Master's Apple Watch. I thought that was quite a cute.
That's good.
Acute addition.
Very ahead of the game.
And how come Samsung haven't jumped on that bandwagon yet? As they seem to jump on the bandwagon of every single product that Apple ever bring out. Right, moving on. So yeah, the TARDIS is retrieved from the crater.
Yeah, with the help of the typical yokel farmer and his tractor.
That doodlebug landed, didn't it?
Bat an eye at the fact that it's probably a police box out of mud. Just Londoners. That's what he says.
Londoners, yeah.
The actor who played the local was a unit corporal in Spearhead from Space.
He was. Well done.
Oh, so he's retired unit. No wonder he didn't bat an eyelid.
Anyway, we find out in this episode that the Master TARDIS is like a cross between a filing cabinet and a computer. And they've also decked it out with a few washing up bowls with holes in, basically. Or is it washing machine parts?
It looked like Woden.
What, the machine? Yeah,
yeah,
I suppose it did.
Yeah,
it
did, yeah.
And the Master's time rotor, I think that time rotor was in the Master's previous TARDIS appearance in Doctor Who. It looks like a load of sort of car wheels sort of glued together.
But these washing basins are so strange. I kind of love them, though.
Well, yeah, I like them. I don't know why they didn't keep them. They're quite effective, actually.
Well, they put the whole set in storage, and it got water damaged.
But it's a washing up bowl. It should be fine.
I think they might have cracked some of them, too. Now, one problem with this particular design, you see the middle of each washing bowl is translucent?
Yes.
So you could often see the set next door through the translucent.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay, fair enough. Anyway, so the Master's now inside his TARDIS, because I think he's just going to go to Atlantis in the TARDIS. The Doctor, meanwhile, gets into his TARDIS with his little gadget while it's in the trench and finds a way, without the help of the Time Lords, hasten to point out, finds a way of tracking the Master. And then we see a rather delightful scene of the Doctor's TARDIS materialising as inciting the Master's TARDIS and vice versa. very Legopolis, or was Legopolis very Time Monster? Yeah.
Legopolis is very Time Monster.
Yeah. Then we...
Although I saw Legopolis first. This was 3 weeks ago. It was the first time I ever saw Time Monster.
Yeah. Interestingly, they used one of these circle things, the round things, to actually for the monitor, for the monitor. What would you call it? It is the monitor, isn't it?
Scanner.
Yeah.
Well, they
scanner.
Usually call
scanner,
it
that's
scanner.
It. Yeah.
They call it the scanner, I thought.
Yeah, we're just yes. Yes, okay, it's a scanner. Yes, right. Anyway, and this leads to some delightful scenes of them going into different console rooms that. Slightly darker in some instances. The Master nearly gets caught by Benton, but outsmarts him yet again. And then we'd see basically we're not interested in what's going on in the lab with the two scientists and Benton. We're really interested in what's going on with the Doctor and the Master and Joe, and the Doctor, the Master's new companion, temporary companion. So they're basically. Sniping at each other from inside their console rooms, and these are the scenes yes. I enjoy the most. But during this period, Benton is turned into a little Stormageddon. And how cute is baby Benton? And bearing in mind that baby probably been born in 71, so be older than you now, Deb. And that's blimmin' old.
That is old.
Did they have who played? Played the baby.
It was John Levine. They just made him a baby.
Darren Plant.
Oh.
Darren Plant.
Friend of the show. No, he's not. I didn't get him on the show, did I? Sorry. Can we get back to the story? I do apologise. So yeah,
that is part of the story.
Oh no, the dog just snored again. I think Star's snoring is a good indicator that we're going off track somewhere along the line. yeah. So just moving ahead. Oh yeah, then the Master and his little sidekick. Meet up inside the Master's console room. Things get a little bit confusing. The only way you can really know which one's which is the fact that the Doctor's TARDIS is in one and the Master's TARDIS is in the other, and that, it's very, very confusing. And then the Master summons Kronos within his console room, and some bloke with a white outfit starts flapping his wings. What's that noise?
I don't know.
That is really
nothing to me.
Oh, spooky. So.
Oh.
What?
I was researching Darren Plant, and one forum says that the baby died before his first birthday.
Thanks for that, for that cheerful note, Kirby. That's one of those things you wish that hadn't been researched. right. Yeah, so.
Oh, it's in several places. Yeah, that's definite.
Basically.
Horse.
Yeah, thank you, Kirby.
Yeah, we're worried about the horse. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, Kronos apparently kills the Doctor. And the Master tries to get control of it with a gold disc. And then so Joe is sort of... Joe's essentially trapped on her own in the TARDIS. And she says something about, get it over and done with.
Do your worst.
Yes. And so we get a bit of a wobbly camera thing going on, and she starts shaking her head about it, and then that's the end of the episode. So that was episode four, wasn't it? Episode five.
Four.
Episode five begins with that scene. And
for me, episode five is where it starts getting really silly.
All right. yeah, so she... Joe, meanwhile, is having a lie down on the TARDIS console room floor, and hears the voice of the Doctor. And the Doctor says, go to panel three, even though the panels aren't particularly numbered.
They are.
I apologise. I apologise.
Master?
Yes?
As I pointed out now twice...
I do apologise.
In the info text... they point out some of the Doctor's subconscious voices are female.
Yes, I know. Yeah. But that's not the only that's not the only point about the female side of things in this story, but we'll come to that later. I wasn't stressed until I started doing this episode. I'm getting this the back of my neck, you know.
You always get stressed doing
the back of my neck is starting to get really oh dear. I have to take some Anadin. I don't even take Anadin. Is that for stress, tense nervous headaches?
Nervous headache relieved by
Anadin
or aspirin or something. That was the advert, yeah.
Whiskey.
So anyway, she flicks this switch and the Doctor appears. He's having a poo, but looks, I think he's on the floor. squatting in a very awkward position. And then the Master arrives in Atlantis. And the King is having a bit of a couple of people sort of speak up against him, or shout up against him, more than speak, actually. One of which is that bloke I said wasn't acting particularly well. And who arrives first?
I need to find a cat so I can hold the cat like Ingrid Pitt was holding the cat.
Yeah.
Beautiful cat, though, wasn't it?
Lucky cat.
Wasn't it a lovely cat, though?
The cat was banned from the set.
Why?
After the cat scratched... Ingrid Pitt.
Whereabouts?
She scratched Ingrid's pits. How'd she manage to get them?
Whereabouts did she scratch Ingrid Kirby?
I have no idea.
Somewhere tender if it got banned.
Yeah,
there's some exposed skin.
That the cat scratched her on the neck.
Oh, I see. So anyway, the Master's TARDIS appears, and I love the way he brushes away all the sort of prongs that are pointing at him.
As
he walks out, and they think he's got the air of the god about him, and Ingrid is sort of really sort of taken by him immediately.
Oh, fancy!
Yeah, he's really all right. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I like the old beard and the old black outfit.
Did you know,
Yes,
Master,
Kirby.
Did you know that Ingrid Pitt wrote a lost story for Doctor Who?
No.
Really?
And it was later made as one of the lost story big finishes called the Macross.
Nope, didn't know that at all.
No.
Or Macross.
No, it's not Macross. It's not blimmin' a Stavros thing. It's Macross.
Macross. I would say
Macross.
Macross.
If you want it to be O, so it'll have to have an E on the end of it.
It's a Colin Baker, Nickel and Bryant.
Cool. I didn't know that. Did you know? The fact that Debbie didn't know that, Kirby.
Probably have it. I'm looking at my my little library right now.
Yeah, I've got one somewhere as well.
Also, Kirby, Ingrid Pitt was a massive cricket fan.
I wonder what you're going to say there for a minute.
When I had pet lizards, I used to feed them crickets.
I was going to give you one of these, Kirby, for your previous very good point, but that's cancelled it out. So you're going to get
one
of these instead. So that cancelled that out. Right, back to Doctor Who.
I've deducted 10 points for showing that I've got the same Trivial Pursuit as
we know she's cheating, don't we, everybody?
No.
So then after the Master arrives and tries to get a bit friendly with the King, the Doctor and Joe arrive. And
when they arrived, he faced at the Master, and the Master was like, what the hell are you? I thought it was really...
Yeah, and then Joe says something like, foiled again?
Yes.
Don't you want to say curses? Foiled again?
Yeah, that's what was going to be my... That was going to be my quote, but I forgot all about it.
This story's got a lot of good Joe quotes.
Yeah.
So Joe then is sort of made to wear a sort of wig quite similar to Ingrid Pitt's wig.
Keeps saying everything
she's not made to wear it. She does it voluntarily.
I know.
No, she's told to go away and get some more suitable attire. She doesn't have a lot of choice.
Don't think it's entirely necessary, though.
Doesn't she?
Yeah.
The Queen takes over and says, all right, you know, she could have a guest room and make her look more acceptable.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought that.
Get your tits out, isn't it?
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Andy. Sorry. I thought that chap that I said is overacts. I can't remember his name. What's his character's name? The one that the love interest for Susan Penhaligon's character. The bloke who gives his life to save Joe, was it? Against the Minotaur? What's his name again?
Hippias.
Well, I hate to say it, but Kirby's right again. She did. She co-wrote the lost story called The Macros. And yes, I do.
He doesn't get another ding because he undid it by doing his appalling attempt at humor.
Unfortunately, she died before Big Finish was able to.
God, what can we do away with the depressing little twists, please?
I'm watching TV with
dead.
Injured horses, dead babies. Let's move on.
Right, anyway, so Hippias has got worse eye makeup than any of the female characters in the story. So Susan Penhaligon is essentially Ingrid Pitt's handmaiden. The Doctor sort of tells the King that, you know, that Master isn't to be trusted. I think the King already realises this.
Yeah, he's not stupid.
And the Master
the King
does.
Is not stupid at all.
No.
Because he tries to hypnotise him, doesn't he?
Yes.
I love that. He's laughed him off, didn't he? Basically, nice try, but no way, Buster.
Having said all this, obviously, Ingrid Pitt is quite attracted to the Master, but makes it quite clear that she doesn't want the King to get hurt. Master doesn't take much notice of that particular wish. And then does a bit of flirting, and that's the first time we've seen the Master flirting with a woman in Doctor Who.
Not much. He's not doing it much, but he's doing it enough to encourage her.
He's touching her hand with his gloved hand and quite close proximity to her. I'd say he's doing some pretty awful flirting.
One thing with the Master, he's always polite, isn't he? You know, it's a nasty piece of work. But even when he's killing people, he does it so politely.
Yes. And listeners might have heard a little bit of the sound of a sort of camera shutter going off there, because I just did a screenshot, because I just thought Andy's little goatee there is starting to make him look a little bit Delgado-ish. At the moment, if you just grew it a little bit longer,
yes.
You would definitely look a bit Delgado-ish. It's not far off.
Are you deliberately doing it that way?
No, it's just I've had this for about 20 years, being like this. I trim it every 3-4 days, shave down the sides, and
You just need a little bit longer. You will be Roger Delgado. Yeah.
Well, actually, as well, especially because I noticed you've got I get a few grey hairs.
Yeah, there you go then.
As well.
I think it's an option. Yeah. Try it. Just over the next couple of months, try and sort of get that Delgado look. I think it'll be quite fitting.
Cosplay.
Yeah.
And shut up about grey hairs. I don't want to talk about grey hairs.
Yeah. I put some sunblock on the other day, and Deb said that, you idiot, you got it all over your beard. It wasn't. It was just white hairs in my beard. It wasn't sunblock at all.
Kirby, what are you talking about having hairs for? Look at the pair of you.
Would you rather?
I've just got my
hair.
Mine's just cut very, very short.
No
hair. Low maintenance hair. Thank you very much.
The no hair is working. It's trying.
It's just a centre parting, isn't it, Kirby? Anyway.
Excuse me?
I said it's just a centre parting.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I'm actually quite pleased. At the age of 52, I've still got a fairly full head of hair.
Yes. Back to Doctor Who. So anyway, the Doctor and the King are sort of bromancing a little bit at the moment. And so meanwhile, like I say, Jo's got a rather wig she didn't need to wear on, and then she gets shoved, because she goes wandering around the corridors and gets shoved into the Minotaur's what would you call it? Lair, is it?
No,
it's
Darth Vader's lair.
Oh, yeah, because obviously Darth Vader is the Minotaur. Prowse.
Dave Prowse. Oh, yes.
He had a bit of a... It was before the Green Cross Code days, I think.
I think this may have been after.
No, Code... I don't remember being that early.
No, before. No, I can remember the Green
Cross Code. All right, Debbie, stop hiding your face with that frock. Somebody's now got to Google the Green Cross Code Man and see when we first saw it.
Okay, I'll do it.
No, you'll stop. Oh, he's gone.
However, I can still hear you.
He was not licensed to be a stuntman, so anything that took a real stuntman to do, like bursting through the wall and all that, was done by who was the one who fell off the ladder?
Terry Walsh.
Terry Walsh.
Yeah. Yes, interesting. So I know the name of Terry Walsh, but not the actual actors and cast members.
The stunts,
So, like you said, you did talk about the fact that people started throwing themselves through walls. Joe was saved by that chap whose name I keep forgetting. Hippias, is it?
Hippias.
Yeah. And then the Doctor does a rather comedic thing with his cloak. And then he gives a gentle chop on the back of the head, and down goes the Minotaur. But for some reason,
Dave Prowse played the Green Cross Code Man from 1971 to 1990.
Wow.
And received the MBE in 2000 as a result of doing that.
Not as a result of being Darth Vader, then?
Yeah.
Andy, you misread that.
Oh.
The Green Cross Code Man was invented in 1975. The Green Cross Code campaign was between 71 and 90.
Okay. So when did Dave Prowse do the Green Cross?
75.
So this is after this. I was right. As, usual.
You're always right.
I know.
Should it be quite deductive? It
gets rather tedious, doesn't it, Mary?
Yes,
I'm so fed up when he said that, Mary. It's wonderful.
So, like I say, the Doctor does some rather comedic things with the Minotaur and with his cloak. And for some reason, the Minotaur just throws himself.
That was so pathetic.
He throws really himself through a wall for some reason. And also, the Doctor's hair doesn't get messed up at all during any of these scenes.
Which never, is quite funny.
For some reason, what happens after that? The Doctor and Joe are then thrown in a dungeon and tied up together. This time,
the Minotaur's head was better than the Nymon. They should have used those.
Yeah, maybe they should. I think it's because they filmed it cleverly, didn't they? They didn't see a lot of its detail. Sorry for keeping you up, Andy.
Not thank you.
Yeah, so the Doctor and Joe are tied up in a dungeon, and unlike Day of the Daleks, aren't able to undo their ties.
Yeah, Joe apologises that she can't undo it.
But it does give them, as Mary's talking about padding, this is a beautiful bit of padding when the Doctor tells a story of some of his childhood days and the Hermit, etc., etc. So, yes, that was padding, Mary, but I think this is padding well worth having in, a little bit like the Victoria and Second Doctor thing in Tomb of the Cybermen. It goes on for... Let's see how long it goes on for. Careful, Andy. Careful. Well, it does go on, doesn't it? A good 5 minutes, that scene.
No, bollocks.
Thank you, Andy.
Five terrible minutes.
My cricket's head's just falling off.
What's falling off?
My cricket's head's just falling off.
Oh, dear.
See, there. That's a head. I don't know where the body's gone.
And that's rather unfortunate. But anyway, during their conversation, they're actually talking about the Campo.
Oh, I didn't realize Ingrid Pitt is also in Warriors of the Deep, because I haven't seen Warriors of the Deep.
Oh, God, yes, she is, yeah.
Okay. We'll see that later. Yeah, the King
and, Ian Collier is going to be Omega.
Thank you. Yes, okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So the King gets manhandled into the little dungeon with them. For some reason, it's enough to kill him. It does get a bit of a bang on the head, to be honest, but he dies very quickly.
I thought we were going to talk about dying.
I'm talking about the storyline. So the Master is now King. King Master. But he's got the Doctor out of the dungeon so as he can gloat in front of him and summon Cronus. Of course, Cronus, as the Doctor says, is a bit chaotic. The Master tries to get away into the TARDIS, but Joe sort of attaches himself to the Master, to the Master as he goes in it, and the Doctor sort of threatens the Master with blowing everything up, and there's a little dial on the Master's TARDIS console showing how dangerous everything's getting, which is quite convenient. He's got a little dial on his console for that purpose, and of course the Master thinks the Doctor's bluffing. And there's a big explosion because Joe presses the button, and both the Master and Joe end up lying on the deck.
Turn the dial.
Oh, it's the same sort of thing. God's sake. And
I'm contractually, my contract says I need to be pedantic.
No, it doesn't. So anyway, after the Joe then runs.
No, night.
Hey. Oh.
Good night.
No, night, darling.
Night, Isla.
Hi, Isla.
Sleep well.
Oh, bless her. Yeah, so the Joe runs across this sort of really weird sort of rainbow backdrop.
She disappears.
Merging into it. which is rather cool. And then, obviously, John Pertwee with his leg up unconscious, as he always is, wakes up fairly quickly. And then Kronos is on the side of the Doctor. Doesn't like the Master very much and thinks, right, I'll free you, Doctor and Joe, but what should we do with the Master? I'll give you one wish or something like that. So they reach to go home. But when she says she's going to put the Master into internal, you know, turmoil, and they take pity on him. Why? Save him. But the point of this particular scene is that Joe says, but you're a woman. And the Kronos says that form doesn't matter. So there we go.
Yeah. Be whoever I want to be.
So there we go. We're talking about, you know, recently all the hoo-ha about a female doctor, etc., etc. And then, you know, 1972, when this episode went out, it was actually said quite clearly that form doesn't matter. So what do we think of that one, everybody?
Oh, it's excellent. Well said.
No, not the episode. I think... Oh, sorry. So, yeah. Well, that just... Did somebody not post that on a screenshot of that on the 20 megabyte page?
I think Sony had... Yes, Sony, that did come up, yes.
Yeah, because that was quite important. So, yes, so, but during all this, of course, they stupidly allow the Master to escape. And then the last thing to restore is Benton back to a man so they can have a good laugh at his, you know.
Bits.
Yeah.
You're assuming, of course, what amazed me is, where did they get a nap? The baby was wearing a nappy, because that's the Alan T. Butcher asked me, was I cosplaying? I said at the time I was watching it, Zach was running around with his nappy on. So when the baby had a nappy, assuming when he went back again, why did Benton lose his clothes?
Oh, I don't know.
Because when he went back in time, he's fully clothed. So you're assuming when he went forward again, he'd be fully clothed.
But he wasn't fully clothed when he originally was a baby, because he climbed out of his clothes.
He would have fallen out of his clothes.
Why did he lose his clothes? And who put a nappy on him?
Well, so they think they would have put a nappy on him, but the thing is,
Why?
I don't know. Even if he had been sat on his clothes, he wouldn't have suddenly been back in his clothes when he grew back into a bloke again. His clothes would be underneath him.
He should have been, because when he went back in time, as Kirby said, his clothes would have stayed the same. There was, you know, he would have shrunk inside. So who put a nappy on him? And then when he went back forward in time again to being a grown man, presumably he would have had his clothes with him.
You are asking for a logic in a six episode.
I know.
In which logic has never been.
I think
I'm assuming he was actually then start naked, which probably Joe Grant probably. Is
I think
he woke up and didn't have time to put his clothes on.
The motto of this show is: it's a science fiction fantasy TV show that covers most things.
We've probably seen Benton naked before.
I bet he has.
Yes.
Anyway, let's talk about what we think of the story. Now, I know you lot are probably going to panic, or some of you are at least, but I thought this was really, really good fun. I personally think this is actually the best Pertwee story we've had so far. That it's got a lot of things to sort of shut up.
No.
A lot of things that you can actually, as we discussed, are a bit silly. But I quite like it simply because, one, the Master's in it. Two, they're flying around in the TARDISes. They're going to different locations. And there's a bit of timey-wiminess going on it. And that's the sort of thing I like in my Doctor Who stories, a mixture of things. Some of it, like I say, was a little bit silly, but I accept that because I really enjoyed the story. I even sect some of the over-the-top acting that certain characters did. But but if I actually enjoy the story and I'm quite engaged in it, I think they've done their job. And once again, though, it could have been a bit shorter. Yeah, they did pad it out. One bit of padding was brilliant. I wouldn't lose it. And the other bit just was a bit boring. So five episodes, I think they could have got it down to four, I think, actually, to be fair. But if they had got it down to four, we may have lost that beautiful scene in which the Doctor talks about his childhood in episode six. So on the whole, quite enjoyed it, and he's eager to speak. Please do so. Andy.
Who is?
You.
Oh, yeah. Right, sorry, thank you, yeah. I'll agree there, actually. It was a fun episode. It was a fun story. It was too long. I think it could have been done in four parts quite well. There's a lot of... it's got a good story. I think the main protagonists worked well together. The Master was very, very good. I just think the last two episodes were pure padding. That's the problem. I think they had to stretch it to get it out to be six episodes. No. I think the Atlantis storyline worked very well. I think the way they worked it with what was going on in Cambridge, again, worked well. But if you cut this out of four parts, I mean, a good tight four-parter, I appreciate what you're saying, Adam, about the fact you lost things about your childhood. When you finish looking at your phone, of course, that is. Mm. But yeah, enjoyed it. A bit too long. But overall, it's not as good as Inferno or Ambassadors, but not bad.
Thank you. Allow me to explain the phone situation. Because I can't see what people are writing on the thread via the computer, I'm going to use my phone to do so. So please, it is irrelevant to the show. So it may have looked one way, but it isn't. Right, Deb's gone off. Adam, oh, no, she's back again.
Apologies, yeah. Sir. Not a
thank you. Right then, Debbie.
Yeah. I really was enjoying this. I thought it was a fun romp, frolic, brilliant, wonderful Doctor Who going on. The Master's chewing the scenery with gusto. It was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. First four episodes, yeah, it was a bit too long getting to Atlantis. But when we got to Atlantis, I wish we hadn't, because it just went downhill. It went downhill, but to such a degree that I was sort of only keeping half an eye on it towards the end. And I missed some of the really good bits. I had to go back and listen again to the conversation with Joe and the Doctor. And I had such high hopes for it because I'd heard nothing but good things, and I'm a big fan of Ingrid Pitt, and this should have come together for me in a really fantastic story, and it just fell on its bottom, and I just felt so frustrated by the easy getaway at the end of the Master and Kronos throughout. Every time Kronos turned up, I was like, seriously? That's a dreaded time monster. That's an eater of time. You know, it's like, what is that? And because they obviously had such fun with it and everything, but it was just, I was left feeling a bit let down by it, to be honest. I mean, I love Doctor Who, always love Doctor Who, even rate the really awful stories, but the fact that the last two episodes of this went so downhill, I just didn't enjoy it so much. But it had such promise.
You spoil sport. Don't think you're going to be the only one thinking that, though. Kirby, right, before you say... Bye-bye, Zach. I mean, good night, Zach. Good night, darling.
Good night, Zach. Bye, Tommy. Right.
Behave yourself.
Good night.
Bless you. Anyway, Kirby, now, I have to say... just take another picture. Kirby. I've got a funny feeling you're going to say, I loved it. So what did you think?
I liked it.
You never listened, Kirby.
Whatever year I got the DVD and I started to watch it and just couldn't get into the first 5 minutes. Then I sat down with this, 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, and I have now watched it three times, enjoying most of it. It's, to me, it was a lot of fun, very representative of this time in Doctor Who. This is actually one of my favorite now of the Jon Pertwee's. thank you. Thank you, sir. Mary's disagreeing with me.
Just like you were disagreeing with Deb.
Right. I did not think it was too over padded. I liked the extreme change, how they handled. I don't know, when I was watching Doctor Who back in the 80s, I had not noticed that six parters were really a four parter and a two part. And now that we're doing this, I'm noticing that. And I liked how it was put together. I like the Atlantis scenes. They were the Minotaur was silly. The one thing I did not like was they didn't really show that that was the destruction of Atlantis very clearly. The whole mix up there where everyone's running around and they're grabbing the crystal and everything. That's supposed to be the destruction of Atlantis. That was not well done.
Wasn't Atlantis, though, the place where we had the story with the fish and the trout near it?
Yeah, Atlantis has been destroyed 3 or 4 different ways on Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
So don't worry about that. It's different timelines.
Oh, anyway. Cool. Well, that's a good answer.
Anyway, I enjoyed it. The third time through, Fred came down and watched with me, and she really enjoys classic Doctor Who. And we sat and watched all 6 episodes at once, and she loved it. Hey. So, and when she loves them, that's a good sign.
Mm. Cool. I suppose we better brace ourselves.
Get your sound effect ready.
It doesn't even need an introduction, does it? Go on in, Mary.
Well, I'm going to read this because... fearful that I wouldn't be here on the show today. I was going to record this as my feedback, so I have this written out.
oh, of all one, the many,
no. And I mean many guys.
Everyone's going...
Let me start again.
Sorry, Tom just gave Deb a kiss.
And I mean many eyes that had to look at this script. Script editors, head of serials at the BBC, the director, the designers, all of whom were able to give their input. Was there not one who said, wait a second. Nothing in this story makes any sense or is believable in any way. The so-called...
Nothing in the world can stop me now.
The so-called monsters are laughable. The acting, especially the Atlantean cast, is horrible.
Can I intervene here just for a sec, Mary? When you come to Britain, I'm not sure you will come to Britain at some point, I would advise not going to a pantomime. Please continue.
Don't worry, Mary, I don't like pantosy.
The spinning kitchen toy is unbelievable. Unit and the brig are more of a comedy act. So I have decided that to have written this as a comedy makes sense. On that level, even Joe's remark of, oh shucks, foiled again, Hippias as the lover to the queen, Sergeant Benton as a baby, the brig suddenly being so stupid about what is possible. When did he become such a Scully? You know, Scully and Mulder and Scully's the one who never believes anything, no matter what she sees.
Steady on, Kirby.
Oh, my chair.
So it just makes some doing? Foil for the a comedy foil for the doctor. You know, and that kitchen contraption. What I read was it was a last minute filler to flesh out episode 3. I mean, you just have to laugh and then you can enjoy this. But to take it on any serious level, it's beyond me that it made it to production.
Happy pie minute.
Yes.
Thanks, Magic. Happy pie minute.
Yes.
What is
3:14.
Oh.
3:14 in the afternoon.
Sorry for that interruption, Mary.
That was from Julia.
Okay.
She's a geek.
Okay. Thank you. Carry on, Mary, please.
No, but that's it. I mean, as long as you can look at it and laugh all the way through, then you know I can accept it. But to think that they seriously made this with any sense of you know, good acting or good production just blows me away.
Suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, really. Major suspension.
Works if the story's quite good. And I think it did work quite well.
But don't you wonder about the brig? I mean, for all that he has seen, all that he's been through with the doctor, and yet for this entire story, it's like, oh, no, that can't be true. Oh, no, that's not possible. And, oh, you know, I don't believe that. It's like, wait a minute. Did somebody do something?
Do you know what? I think they're gearing up, because that's a bit like the characterization of the Brigadier in a story called The Three Doctors, which is coming up quite soon. Mm-hmm. So that's probably what they're trying to do. They're probably trying to lay down a little bit of that version of the Brigadier for that story, so that's fine.
Will that be next week or the week after? You'll let us know.
Oh, I'm hoping it's next week. I don't think I've got anything in my calendar for next week.
Turning a nice character into more of a comedy foil.
Well, that's essentially what he's going to be like in the next story. He's still a nice character, but he is a bit of a more of a comedy character in the next story, because it's not really about the Brig in that one. I think it's more about the Doctors in that, and the Three Doctors. It's a bit of a comedy story, to be fair.
Yes.
It really is. I mean, it's meant to be.
Yeah, and it's good. I love it.
But I think they meant this one to be serious.
So that's it for that side of things. I did have on my phone here Magic. So Magic has joined me on my lap. He's just giving me a kiss as well, which is very nice. I get some affection for one member of the family at least. All right, on the feed, Jeff Waddle says, "Ooh, I like those rocks on the wall. Very nice." These rocks on the wall, as you call them, is actually our fireplace, and they've been there since before we bought the house. Alan T. Butcher says, "Because time has stopped." I think he's talking about something we related to earlier. Laurie Nick says, "Yay, I made it to the podcast after all." Well, that's good news. And then he says, "Looks at remodel behind Adam." Ooh, fancy, hey? Remodel? What's he talking about? Alan T. Butcher, "Have left Fed back." You right about that there, Deb?
Yeah, go through.
Then Laurie says, "Criminy Kirby is on a roll with morbid tidbits today." Yeah. And then she says, "Flirty eyes master," essentially agreeing with me, so gets one of these. And Alan T. Butcher says, "I try for a Delgado, but overshoot." Which is probably He tries for a Delgado, but it overshot. I thought we were talking about his beard, possibly.
Okay.
And then he says, "Atlantis, New Atlantis, and New Atlantis." So that was the end of the comments on the thread. So let's see what we got online. I don't know if anybody left anything on my little
Now, may be stuff in two or three other threads. There's where you asked for feedback.
Yeah, I did that because I noticed no one had left anything on the one you asked for.
They did. Have left things on both of the ones.
Okay, well, on the one I did, we got Laurie Nick said, I'll be with a client right about there." No, obviously that's just talking about whether she was going to be on the show or not, and she will be able to watch the show or not, and she is. Kirby's one ended up with Joshua
Dyson. No, she continues. She's got more than that.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Laurie. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm really fond of the Time Monster. Yes, it's cheesy, but what other show gives us Atlanteans in Minoan makeup and dress? Did someone, possibly the master, tell TOMTIT? Tomtit. Women's lib. Benton in a diaper and Big Bird on a wire. And Joshua Dybul says, "This story seems too often get quite a slating, but I love it. Very representative of the Third Doctor stories." Sorry, I've read that. Really. "One of my favourite Doctors. I was only 2 years old when it aired." Tomtit. Oh, I've got to get the dog down. He's starting to shake now. "You couldn't make it up. Makes me giggle every time they mention it." What was this Tomtit thing again?
Tomtit was the name of the project.
Oh, that's right, yeah. "Yep, the monster is awful, but you have to laugh." You do. "Love the speed up of time thing when the Doctor goes at lightning yes. speed. Did he ever do this again?" He did sort of a little bit, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, I think in Planet of Spiders, I think he did as well. "No, methinks. A great story and great representative of the era. Sorry for the short review, but I'm currently enjoying a swelteringly hot holiday in Magaluf, Mallorca, and need to head for the beach. Best wishes to you all." Thank you for taking the time out of your holiday to do that. And then Kirby Bartlett Sloan posted something about Groucho Marx.
Singing the aria from the Mikado that mentions a Tomtit.
Yeah. Oh, Well, thank you for that. Right, let's have a look on the Gmail.
Let me find the other thread from two weeks ago. No, that's yesterday's.
Oh, carry on then, Kirby.
I'm trying to find it.
Get a move on then, because I've got emailed feedback. Which is quite exciting.
Two weeks. Hey, hang on. I'll find it. Oh, here we go.
Oh, good.
Jeff Waddle was commenting about the info text I posted about some of the doctor's subconscious voices are female, and they mention animus and anima. Mm. And Jeff Waddle says, the animus? Are we doing the web planet as well? Hooray! Dino says, good. We'll be a welcome distraction from the disaster that is yet to come. He's talking about the next doctor.
Oh.
Thankfully, I have a lot of unwatched classic series to get me through this incorrect incarnation.
Mm.
That's it.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I thought there was more, but that was it.
That was it. Okay. Deb, you don't have to read what I've sent you just yet. I'm just giving you a bit of a heads up on that one. Aren't I kind to you? So, we have Ian Burge. Bother. Okay. Oh, I'm going to have to try and do this one myself. Because Deb's little reading window will be a bit small. I'm going to do this slowly. Ian Burge says, The Time Monster Review. Joe, what do we do now, Doctor? The Doctor. Three guesses. Joe, wait. The Doctor, correct. Joe, but Doctor, what are we waiting for? The Doctor. Oh, for this overly long six-parter to end and for the far superior Series 10 to begin, Miss Grant. He goes on to say, although in the classic period of Doctor Who, the Time Monster is not counted as a classic episode, which is a bit of a mystery when you think that this episode, well, what this episode had to offer. The Master seems with another cunning plot. Oh, sorry, returns. Sorry, I'm glasses are terrible. The Master returns with another cunning plot, the mystery of Atlantis with beautiful ladies, one for the dads. UNIT, a plucky female scientist doing her bit for women's rights, and finally a story about time travel, which is often and rather bizarrely lacking from Who stories. So it was a bit of which is me talking now, by the way. This sort of putting in women characters that go on about women's lib, so they could take the mickey out of women's lib a little bit. I got that feeling from it, to be fair. But anyway, sadly, back to Ian. Sadly, what we get is reality in a wasted opportunity with every element lacking in plot, budget and acting ability. Well, not all acting ability. The Master's plot is so complicated and at the same time so simple that I'm surprised it wasn't later used by the Cybermen. Why is the Master, with his access to the TARDIS, to his TARDIS, a computer, etc., and its ability to transport the Master to some future society with superior technology, going through the trouble of pretending to be a Greek scientist and risking being caught by the authorities so that he can have access to technology which really isn't that great. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show. Right, anyway. of course, our laboratory... And he's going to do it underneath the nose of the Doctor anyway, just for the fun of it. Of course, our lab laboratory-based early episodes give us the strong female character of Dr. Ruth Ingram. However, by the end of episode two, she's simply standing there listening to the Doctor or taking care of her now-aged brother. Oh, is it a brother? I didn't realise that. It's not just her character who is short-changed, sadly. UNIT and the Brig are the comedic element of the plot and go through the motions of soldiering or stand still when trapped in the time bubble, a bit like the script. This story should have done for timey-wimey Doctor Who stories what the Green Death did for environmental stories or what the Talons of Weng Chiang did for Victorian Gothic, but after its confusing and tiresome episode, this confusing... Oh, so no, I did say it. After its confusing and tiresome episode, it did for timey-wimey what Twin Dilemma did for regeneration stories. After the lab and time experiments, we are taken to Atlantis. Still can not really work this out. I suppose the writer didn't care. Maybe he thought, nothing in the world can stop me now. But that's another Atlantis story. Anyway, we are taken around Atlantis, which is made up of props from the BBC's latest production of Julius Caesar. Meet a Minotaur, and a lady whose dress seems to be exploding has no one told her. Oh well, the dads will love it.
They did.
Then everyone dies. I loved it as a child. And then everyone dies in an earthquake, and we're back home after meeting the face of Beau's giant girlfriend. I could go on criticizing this story, and as the bird-like Kronos creature was so bad it made the Mirka look good. But it's still better than most of the trash we get on TV these days, and although we might not get this story out of our DVD collection to watch it regularly, we Doctor Who fans will still watch it again and again and love it in some way. Well, some of us will. The Time Monster is a wasted story that had so much potential. Maybe it should have been released in the Missed Opportunities box set rather than the Myths and Legends one. To finish, here are some examples of lost transcripts which could be released as VAM on the Missed Opportunities box set. Ring, ring, ring. Barry Letts. Hello, it's Barry Letts' office. BBC executive. Hi, Barry. It's Nigel here from the main BBC office. Barry Letts. Oh, hi, Nigel. What can I do for you? Nigel. Well, Barry, we've just seen the rushes for the Time Monster. Barry Letts. Great. What do you think? Nigel. Fab, darling, fab. Just a little thing, though. Barry Letts. Yes. What's that? Nigel. Well, Barry, when we said we wanted to see more bull, we meant the Minotaur, not the script and the acting. Ring, ring, ring. Nigel. Hello. Agent.
Yes.
Oh, hi, Nigel. It's Ingrid Pitt's agent here. Nigel. Oh, yes. What can we do for you, agent? Well, it's a bit delicate, Nigel. Ingrid's not happy with the role she was given in The Time Monster. She feels it's not really up to the quality she's used to and is threatening to pull out. Nigel. Oh, dear. We really need her in this project. Tell you what, she goes through it this time. I promise in the future we'll find her an amazing part in a truly classic Doctor Who story. After all, we won't cast her in two awful stories. Just couldn't happen. Hee hee. Now on to the three Doctors. Right. So yeah, thank you, Ian. Sorry about my reading out of it, but they were laughing and so was I inside. I didn't mean that rudely. I couldn't laugh outside because I was reading it. Debbie always does that laugh as if I'm being mean to somebody, and I'm not.
No.
Right. Okay, Jeff Waddle. I like Ingrid Pitt. The rest of the story is garbage, though.
Oh, it isn't.
Right. Little comment there from Gary. No, it isn't. Okay, let's do this then. Where is the old thing? I haven't played it for such a long time. Oh, there it is.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hey!
Creature too horrible to imagine. Half man, half beast. The Time Monster by Robert Sloman. The Doctor builds a device out of random objects, like Matt Smith's Doctor did later in The Lodger.
Yes.
We all know that Atlantis gets destroyed, so there's some pathos when the Atlanteans want to save it. I wrote my notes a week ago and cannot remember the Doctor cooking in the story. They say, we do not often see the various Doctors cooking, although two of them were bakers. That wink creature was weird. Was it Kronos or Flappy Bird? Some people have been kicking up a fuss about Jodie Whittaker. Doctor 13. Unlucky for some.
Legs! I've still got legs! Good! Arms! Hands! Knee! Fingers! Lots of fingers! Ears! Yes, eyes too! Nose! And I've had worse. Kidneys! I've got new kidneys! I don't like the colour!
I know I have the body of a weak and feeble woman, but I have the heart of a king, and the King of England too.
Bye for now.
Chuck.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That's Ian Kirk, everybody.
Yay!
Yes, I don't know where I should bother doing this. I haven't even set anything up for it. But nevertheless, I suppose, even though you don't deserve it, the effort I put into this show, it's the time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. God.
Alan T. Butcher's feedback?
Yeah.
I'm not bothered about that. I'm only joking! I'll go on then.
I've been sat here, my battery slowly going down.
Oh, don't come up with excuses for running out of whatever things. Good, because I needed to prepare a few things. Sorry about that, Alan. Carry on.
The transmission of monsters through institutional... Oh, God, there we go.
You sure you want to go forward with this, Deb?
Institutional thingamies, dear 20 megabyters, the Time Monster is, of course, a closely studied exploration of the naturally paired subject matters of academic research funding and ancient courtly intrigue. The to and fro of the Cambridge-based escapades clearly reflect the stop-start nature of academic research, the search for advances within the gaps of knowledge, and the sometimes political threats to the continuation of research into unorthodox hypotheses. It also touches upon the infantilization of some scientists required to prove a point. The Atlantis storyline presents the straightforward power play provoked by the Master, a new power on the scene threatening the older established order, with the materialistic power broker being the Queen, who refrains from her karate chopping expertise. The deep buried power of the Green Cross Codeman also lurks below in the labyrinth. The eponymous monster of time, Kronos, is of course one link between the largely disparate and consecutive narrative and our perennial Time Lord leads. Okay. It should be noted that whilst the execution of Kronos often comes under some critical derision, there is no reason to believe that an all-powerful super being should not manifest itself as something that looks like a man in a flappy white bird suit.
Why not?
It would be able to do so if it wished so to do. We also learned that the Time Lord Campo Rinpoche, apparently a great mentor of the Doctor's, resides at this time in Atlantis, while legendary Time Lord Omega was keeping an eye on the Master undercover as hapless, crassly, chauvinistic junior research scientist Stuart Hyde. All in all, the Time Monster is an excellent and varied tale which maintains your interest easily through both main sections of the narrative and ties them up neatly with a time ram and appropriately resolves itself with the Dirt Air Vortex. Next up, Doctor Who Cubed, the willful return of Azal, who loses his head, and the final First Doctor appearance. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Yay!
Sorry, I didn't get any of that. Can you read it again?
Referring to the next story, I've never seen this. I'm looking forward to this. The Three Doctors.
Really?
I've never seen it.
Oh my goodness.
I had a chance to watch it about a year ago, and I thought, do you know what? I'm actually just going to save it for when
we're
doing the journey.
You're in for a treat.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, let's hope you're going to be on the show, Debbie. That nothing stops you from coming on the show when we do it.
Otherwise, that will be. Stab you in the
head. Oh, blimey, well, I hope not. I'd like to know if Andy's still there, because it's quite an important aspect of the next part of the show. Oh, dear.
Does not appear.
Oh, dear. How are we going to do this without Andy? I'm worried.
I was on mute. Circuit, I was on mute.
Ah, there he is. Oh, good. Had me worried for a few moments there.
It's just you lot were going on quite well without me, so I thought if you should let you
well,
know.
Well, we normally do that, but no, we did start to miss you a bit, Andy. Right then, it's now time properly for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Oh, bugger. How do I get it start back at the beginning? Here we go. Right, this week we're going to be doing a special Trivial Pursuit version of the show based on Trivial Pursuit questions from the 2012 edition. I can't remember now. The 2013 edition of Trivial Pursuit. Debbie has been deducted 10 points for cheating by showing me that she actually had the box in a thing. So she clearly would have referred to them. So she's, oh, I'll just put it on Mary's deduction. Sorry about that.
How could she go through 600 questions to find...
She cheated. Who's yawning? I'm only joking, Deb. Deb.
She's run away now. Look at that. You were so
Debbie,
so
I was joking.
Now Debbie. She's got it.
Right, okay. But the rest of the shows are going to be done in a similar sort of way to the way we normally do it. I've got a collection of cards here. When I feel that I've got completely bored of it, we're going to stop playing, and that'll be the end of the game. Right then, so it'll be around 20 questions, I think. Right, Magic's enthralled down the bottom there. Right, the scoring system are...
Magic enthralled in your bottom?
Eh? I said Magic he's enthralled. No, he's enthralled. He sat down there. Looking enthralled.
Okay.
Right, the scoring system for this game.
Andy has turned into a skylight.
Yeah, shut up.
Yeah, he's a
great. Shut up. Right, so scoring system, there are categories of questions on the cards. There's Time Lords, Companions, Episodes and Stories, Years and Dates, Monsters and Cast, Crew and Beyond. Four, I will ask you what category you would like to ask me to ask you a question on. If you say Time Lords or Companions, it will be worth 1 point. And obviously, if you get it wrong, it'll still be worth 1 point to whoever wants to take it on. If you say Episodes and Stories, or if you say Years and Dates, it'll be worth 2 points. And then if you get it wrong and someone takes it on, it goes down to one. And if you decide on Monsters, or if you decide on Cast, Crew and Beyond, it'll be worth 3 points. And if you get it wrong, it then becomes 2 points subsequently for the rest of the players. And also,
what was the last category?
Cast, Crew and Beyond. But the rest of it's going to be the same. So Mary, who do you think is going to win this, or be at the end of the questionings? Sorry for keeping you awake, Andy.
That's all right.
Kirby?
Huh? What?
No, she's saying you. So who do you think will be at the bottom?
Magic, obviously.
Not you. Mary, who do you think is going to be?
Me, I'll be at the bottom.
Okay, right. Andy, who do you think will win?
Kirby.
Pattern developing here. And who do you think is going to be at the bottom?
Me.
Oh. I've got to put Mandy down. For God's sake.
Mandy? Who's Mandy?
Well, I started typing Mary and then changed it to you. Kirby, who do you think will be winning this particular question thing?
Andy.
And who?
Adam.
What?
Are you getting points?
No. Right. Kirby, who do you think is going to be at the bottom?
Mary.
Debbie, who do you think is going to win?
Kirby.
And who do you think would be at the bottom?
Me!
You know what? Right. There's an ulterior motive here about us trying to play to lose, actually.
Yeah, it's right. A race to the bottom.
Let's see if I can get my bell ready. There's my bell. Okay, first question will go to Mary. What category would you like? Like I said, Time Lords, Companions, Episodes, Stories, Years and Dates, Monsters, or Cast, Crew and Beyond. What category would you like a question on?
Companions.
Don't forget, everybody still has a joker. I haven't put that on the card. Companion. The companion question. That's a nice pink one. It is this. What is the name of Henry Avery's pirate ship?
That's not a companion.
That's a companion question. I don't understand why, but that's...
If I may be pedantic, this is probably the sort of thing that I was referring to earlier.
Can she answer the question?
Yes.
Well, I don't have any idea.
Okay, therefore it's a... That goes into the bonus pot. Ooh. So, anybody know the answer?
I don't remember.
Was it the one...
Hang on, Debbie. Debbie's coming up with an answer. Debbie?
Was it the one from The Curse of the Black Spot?
Which is called...
Was it called The Jolly Roger?
It wasn't called The Jolly Roger. It was called The Fancy. Okay.
Debbie, I call that story The Curse of the Bad Plot.
I think a lot of people do, yeah.
Yes, so what does that have to do with The Companion?
Nothing.
This is the Trivial Pursuit that came out, and they tended to focus more on new season. So I think they're classing anybody who has an adventure with the Doctor as a companion for the questions.
Yeah, can I continue, please?
Yes.
Right. Andy.
Hello.
What category would you like?
Oh, I'll go with companions.
Therefore, I nearly asked you the same question as Mary. Right, so Andy's companion question is, which famous classic author is the Doctor with when he encounters the Gelth in the 19th century Cardiff?
We all know.
Can you say it again? So I think people talked across it.
Yeah, shall I deduct points from them?
No.
Yeah, go on,
do it. No, I can't do that because they do that normally. Right, the question is, which famous classic author was with the Doctor when he encounters the Gelf in 19th century Cardiff?
Oh, God. It's one of, it's either Dickens or Shakespeare. And, oh, flippin' heck. I will go with Shakespeare.
I said I know first.
Hang on, Debbie. So I've just got to put a point in the bonus spot.
Debbie said
all right, go on then, Debbie.
So it's Dickens, isn't it?
Point deducted for Andy for jumping
this
in.
This is the only way I'm going to get my joker, so I'm going to play my joker on this and say it's Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
That's fine. I knew you were going to say that. I'm going to give you that, even though I had to deduct a point from Andy for saying the answer before you said it. That's his correct answer. Right, this next question goes to Kirby.
Monsters.
Oh, hang on, I've got to take Debbie's joker off, sorry. Monsters, that is a green one. Three. Bloody hell, Kirby, you're going for it. Right. What is unusual about the Dalek that attacks the 11th Doctor in the National Museum?
What is unusual?
I'm gonna go joker.
Yeah.
It's stone.
6 points to Kirby. Wow. Nice, that's the way to play the game, isn't it? Right, Debbie.
Hello. Can I go for monsters too, please?
Ooh, Smarty Pants is just going for the big ones. Hang on, Magic wants to get out. Hang on.
Come on then.
Slap your ears.
Okay.
What is that, Kirby?
Monsters,
it's,
Debbie?
It's some sort of... I don't know where I got it.
Can you put it away? Should we carry on?
Stuffed animal.
Debbie. Debbie.
Yes.
Right. What name did Davros, not Davros Americans, Davros give to the Doctor's group of allies made up of Sarah Jane, Jack, Rose, Mickey, Donna and Martha?
Army?
No. Anybody? Good Lord.
Nope.
The answer was Children of Time. So, we've got a bonus bot question, and I need to get the dog sorted out.
It was interesting earlier when Mary put the cat out, who I didn't know was on fire, and... And Debbie's cat went up the stairs at the same time.
Grief. Nearly got me into trouble then.
Cross and proud looking Maya.
Excuse me, you nearly got me into trouble then.
Did I?
All of you did. Well, Kirby did. I had the door open while I let the dog out, and he starts talking, and they're all upstairs in asleep in bed, or they were. Right, so as a bonus pot question, which I shall choose myself, here we go. I'm not going to tell you what category it is. This is a bonus pop question. Are we ready? I'm going to hold this card so nobody can see the answer. It's on the back, you see. What organisation's round badge sits on the front of the Doctor's TARDIS?
I know.
Go on, Andy.
St John's Ambulance.
Now, essentially, you could have played your joker on that bonus pop question. There were 4 points in it. Would have become 8, but nevertheless, you get 4, which takes you up to 3, because you were on -1. So, well done, Andy. Okay. Next question goes to Mary. What category would you like, Mary?
Doctors.
Doctors. Okay, which one's that one? What colour's that? That is... Doctor, do you mean Time Lords?
Time Lords.
Right.
That's a golden.
Yeah, it's broader than I hoped. Huh?
Yeah. Right then, Mary, here we go.
Good God, what are those, Kirby?
They're horrible!
Right, point deducted for Kirby for distracting everybody. Down to 5.
I'm doing that.
And a point deducted for Andy for playing along with it. He's down to 2. Mary, this is your question. How many incarnations of the Doctor have come face to face with a Santaran up to, obviously, not 2013? So, how many incarnations of the Doctor have come face to face with a Santaran?
Oh, there we go.
No, Mary's go, this is. It might be worth a guess if you don't know it.
Or I'm thinking 4.
You're thinking... Wrong. Andy, you said you think you'd have a go.
I'll go with three.
And it's a... No, it's not that either. Both of you got it wrong. The answer is six. Second, third, six. Fourth, fifth, tenth, 11th. Yes, the second doctor did in the twin in the two doctors.
The second coming across the Suntaran.
I was going for seven.
In the two doctors.
Yeah. The third doctor did in their introductory story, in The Time Warrior. The fourth doctor obviously did in several occasions. The sixth doctor did in The Two Doctors. The tenth doctor did, obviously, with the Sontaran stratagem. And the 11th doctor did with Strax.
Where's the music coming from?
Right.
Yeah, where's the music?
Andy,
hang on a second.
You're rubbing the microphone. It sounds very loud.
I've just shut the conservatory door. That'll cut the music off.
Oh, no, it's not that. It's just you're rubbing the microphone. It's sort of coming across as being rather loud. I'm just thinking of people with their
Has the music now gone, though?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's me shutting the turkey door. Let's go.
So, sorry about that, Mary. You got that wrong. Right, Andy.
Yep.
What category would you like?
Time Lords.
Time Lords, okay. I'll try to use that one then. Time Lords. What was the name of the Mexican dictator who was the exact double of the second doctor?
What was his name?
I know. I know.
Oh, God.
I know.
Yeah, I know, and I should. I can't think of it. Thank you.
He's cheating.
No, I'm not. I'm not looking at anything, no. Sorry, Kirby, it's yours. I can't remember.
All we saw was the skylight.
Hang on. I've got a player.
Gone.
And Kirby apparently knows.
Salamander.
Of course it is.
It's the correct answer. Right. So that takes us to Kirby's question.
Master.
Go on then, what category?
Monsters.
Seems to like the monsters category, everybody, doesn't he? What alien race had Prisoner Zero escaped from?
Oh,
the
my.
Atraxi.
Yeah. He played his Joker.
Yes.
Aww.
Smarty pants. Kirby, right. Pardon me. Debbie.
Yes.
What category would you like?
Companions. Is that a category?
Companions is a category. What type of ball does Brian Williams throw for Tracy, the Triceratops?
Golf ball.
You could have. No, you haven't got your Joker. Have you? You've already played it. Sorry.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I don't know why you played your Joker on a follow up.
I thought I'd be really bad.
Right, bonus bot question. Everybody ready?
Yeah.
What is the name of the Time Lady who is 140 years old and graduated from the with a triple first from the Time Lord Academy? And Kirby knows.
Romana.
Yeah.
Romana, but if you can give a full name, you get...
Romana Duratva Lundar.
There we go.
Actually, no, it's Fred.
Yes, Fred.
Correct answer.
I'm only somewhat of a nerd.
Okay, score update then. In last place with no points, it's Mary. In third place with 2 points, it's Andy. In second place with 4 points, it's Debbie, and in the lead with 11 points, it's Kirby, in part of the fact because he played a joker at a particularly good point of the game. Two jokers left to play. Surprise, surprise, Andy and Mary. The next question goes to Mary. What category would you like? If you'd like me to remind you of the categories, I'm quite happy to do so.
Yeah, I would like a reminder.
Okay, Time Lords, Companions, Episodes and Stories, Years and Dates, Monsters and Cast, Crew and Beyond.
Monsters.
Monsters. Do-do-do-do. Oh, that's the Anders family, sorry.
I thought you were going into old Hancock's Half Hour then.
All right. Okay, here's a monstrous question for Mary. What bat-like alien species were using school children to solve the Skasis paradigm? Can I say that again? What bat-like alien species were using school children to solve the Skasis paradigm?
Oh, I know that. Oh, golly. I can't think of their names. I could tell you a story, but I can't tell you the names of the creatures, so I'll have to pass.
Anybody know? Not even Kirby?
Not off the top of my head.
Whoa, that's a first. So therefore it's and they're all shouting it, I suspect.
It's not
fair. Listeners at the screen. The Krillitanes.
What are they called?
Krillitanes is the answer. Yes. Okay.
Andy.
Hey?
Krillitane.
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 Andy, what category would you like?
Oh, let's go Casca and Beyond. I've got nothing to lose, have I?
No, you haven't. That's true. What reptilian baddie was created by writer Malcolm Hulk?
I know.
Right. Yes. I will go Joker Solarium.
Yay.
Great answer. Where do you stop knocking the blimmin' microphone? I can imagine people, they're walking down the road with their blimmin' earphones
in. It's Kirby.
Right, Kirby, point deducted.
Thank you, sir.
Right, so actually, whose go is it? It's Kirby's, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now we can't hear you now. You've done something to your microphone, and all we can hear is this.
Master? Take your Mickey Mouse ears off, Kirby.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, no. But it's like you're really, really quiet now because you've ruined your microphone.
Let me put it on mute.
Oh, it's getting better. It's getting better. It's getting better.
How's
that?
Better. Just leave it. It's fine. Right. Kirby.
What Mickey Mouse ears? What are you talking about? Master?
Right, point deducted for Kirby for distracting people again. Right, this is your question.
Yes.
Monsters. Oh, no, we don't know what category. Monsters. Do you say monsters?
Yes, yes, I said monsters.
Okay, right then. Let's try this one. Which 1980s alternative comedian guest starred in The Revelation of the Daleks?
I know.
He was in The Young Ones. Arg.
No, it wasn't Arg. He wasn't in Young Ones, I don't think.
No. I don't remember his name, even though he was the landlord on The Young Ones. Sorry. Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, hang on. I haven't played my jingle yet. Hang on. Let me get rid of this. Andy.
Alexis Hale.
Thank you.
There's a correct answer. Okay. Debbie.
Yeah.
Category?
Monsters again.
It's a nice category.
It's a good category, actually.
Hang on, I got the dog. Can everybody quiet? Be quiet while I open the door and see what the blimmin' the dog's up to.
Get in here, get in. Get.
Right. Debbie, this is a monsters question for you. Sylvester McCoy, aka the Seventh Doctor, starred in the movie adaptation of The Hobbit, but who did he portray?
Would you like the question, Adam? What was that?
Radagast the Brown.
Yeah, we didn't hear that because we talked across.
All right,
I got it.
Yeah,
but she got it right.
Well, Debbie, I'm going to give you this. All right, but I will read. Poor, when have you done something? I'm going to have to check the other room. Has somebody done something very naughty in the other room? Because if you have, I'm going to be blowing my top. Right, the question was, if you want to hear it, Sylvester McCoy, a.k.a. the Seventh Doctor, starred in the movie adaptation of The Hobbit, but who did he portray? Yep. And Debbie got it right.
Radagast the Bird Tamer, Radagast the Fool.
Okay. Yep. Next question will be a bonus spot question, but I just need to investigate. There's no naughty poo in the other room, because magic is very agitated and there's a very funny smell wafting through.
We need to be very quiet.
Actually, it's no should
be that, shouldn't it? Could be like Zach when he's in a dump. God, blimey. Very quiet, I'm hunting weapons.
Yeah, that's right. He pushed the back door open and did it.
That's
a relief.
But right outside, though. Was it right outside?
Of course it was outside. Right, everybody, this is a bonus spot question. You have to be very quick and sharp. Are we ready? There's 3 points available for this.
Adam, you won't share that, Adam. We didn't hear you.
No, I didn't.
Right. Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
No,
yes, you did.
I didn't. When you listen to this show back, you'll hear quite clearly that I did not go share. Well, you don't listen to it back, do you? So you won't know. Right.
Yes, I do.
Shut up.
I do.
And I enjoyed the surprise episode, by the way.
Thank you. Can I get on?
Thank you.
Which Doctor's outfit featured a stick of celery?
I know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Dr. Peter Davidson.
Friend of the show. So that's 3 points for Debbie. There's no points in the bonus pot, and the score update is in last place with Mary. In last place with no points, it's Mary. In second place with 7 points, it's Andy. And in joint first place with 9 points each, is Debbie and Kirby. So, Mary, which category would you like?
I have to leave all of this. I have to leave all of you in about 3 minutes.
Okay, well, it'll be the last round.
No.
Okay.
Go on, then. What category would you like?
Time Lords.
Time Lords, okay. No, I can't use that one, just on that one. What was the name of the Ood who visited the 10th Doctor during his final adventures and eventually sang him to his sleep?
His name?
Yes.
I know.
Speaking of Time Lord, no, I don't know.
No. All right, okay, that's that one. At least it's a consistent performance there, Mary. Kirby knows.
No, I don't know.
Oh, who said they knew?
Kirby did.
I did, but now I don't remember.
Oh, for goodness sake, after all that.
Did you suddenly forget?
Yeah. Was it Ood Gamma?
No, Ood Sigma.
No.
Ood Sigma.
Sigma.
Yes. Thank you, Mary. Sorry for that. Andy, category?
Go cast and crew again. One of the closest.
Oh, cast and crew, yeah, the orange one, yeah. Right, this is Andy's question then. What was the name of the famous immigration station in New York's Hudson Bay that Captain Jack had to pass through in 1892?
No idea.
Therefore, I can play this little gadget here. And apparently, Kirby knows.
Ellis Island.
Ooh, nearly missed that. Here's the correct answer.
Bing, bing, bing.
Bing, bing, bing.
Right, Kirby's question.
Master.
Go on,
Monsters.
Then. Master Monsters. Right, Master Monsters question is, Mark Gatiss has written and starred in several Doctor Who episodes. Which of the following did he also star in? League of Gentlemen, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea, or Gentlemen Prefer Blondes?
I know.
Well, Andy knows and I don't.
Hang on, let me play the...
first.
Who said I know first?
I did.
I'd heard Andy's.
I heard Andy's first.
I heard Andy. So Andy counts, Deb.
Give it to Andy.
Go on in, Andy.
It's a League of Gentlemen.
It's a great
one
answer.
Of my favourite shows.
By the way,
it's so dark. It's unbelievable.
It is. Debbie's question. Go on in, quick.
Monsters.
Monsters. Okay. I really seems to like monster questions. Hang on, who got that one out?
I like monster questions.
Me too.
Good. I didn't give Andy enough points for that one. Sorry, Andy.
No.
Right, Debbie.
Yes.
Monster question. Which American...
Monsters.
Shut up. Yeah. Which American medical drama was Alex Kinston, a.k.a. River Song, a long-standing cast member of?
ER.
Yes.
Bonus pot question. Are we ready?
Yes.
What was Martha Jones' mother's name? Now, if I can give you some alternatives if nobody knows the answer off the start. What was Martha Jones'...
Mrs. Jones.
What was Martha Jones's? I'll give you a point for comedy reasons, even though it wasn't particularly funny. What was... Debbie, what was Martha Jones' mother's name? Anybody? No? Okay, Debbie, still your... Still your question. It's Francis, Francine, Francisco, or Franella.
Was it Francine? Know.
It was. Bonus pot. Hang on, have you done this right?
You've done one.
That was the bonus pot, wasn't it? You put me off.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was
the
bonus
pot. That's the end of this.
So 4 points go.
That's the end of the questions.
End of the question.
Because Mary's got to go right now.
Yeah.
Mary's going to work.
She's a bated breath situation for Mary. Okay, so Mary predicted Kirby to win. Current scores. Mary with none. Andy and Kirby with 10. Are you off?
Yeah, I'm off.
Don't forget to listen to the show and find out what happened.
As if I didn't know.
Well, for the listeners' benefit, I won't exactly call
Bye,
it
Mary.
A benefit.
Bye, Mary. Soon. Take care.
Yeah, for the listeners' benefit, the score. There is one last thing to do in quiz because obviously Mary still had a joker point left. So there is another bonus bot question, which is this one. Which Time Lord always has a tattoo of a mythical serpent eating his own tail?
I know.
On his, go on, Em.
John Pertwee, Third Doctor.
That is jumped in a bit too quick there. No, it wasn't the John Pertwee, Third Doctor. Anybody know?
Master?
No, actually jumped in. That's wrong. The answer.
Oh,
it's
the Corsair, isn't it?
The Corsair, yeah.
So it's still in there, then. In the end of time, the Doctor is warned that he will knock four times, but which unlikely person ends up fulfilling the prophecy?
I know.
Go on, Andy.
Oh, God, it's Bernard Cribbins' character.
Which is called?
Bollocks. What's his
name? No,
called?
It's not that. Not, definitely not that.
Oh. Damn, it's Bernard Cribbins' character. Yes, it is.
Well, that's not the answer.
Yeah, no.
Anybody?
No.
Anybody? Good God.
Oh, God. I can't believe we should know this.
All right, yeah, still in there, then. Still in there.
My head. Sorry.
Still in there. Complete the title.
What's the answer? What's the answer?
The answer was Mott, Wilfred Mott.
Mott, there you go. Yeah.
All right, complete the title. A town called?
I know.
Go
Palace.
On. Shut up. Go on, Andy.
Mercy.
Got there in the end. So that is the end of the questions at last. Mary wouldn't have got much benefit out of those. Right, her score was zero. She predicted Kirby to win. Oh, sorry, the scores are. Sorry, in last place, Mary was zero. In third place with 10 is Kirby. Second place with 11 is Andy. And in the lead with 15 is Debbie. Mary predicted Kirby to win. Naught becomes naught. And then she predicted herself to be at the bottom, which is naught becomes naught, even though she got it right. Andy predicted Kirby to be ahead, which is naught, and predicted himself to be at the bottom, which is naught, so his score stays at 11. Kirby predicted Andy to be ahead, which is naught, and Mary to the bottom, which got that bit right. Well done. Debbie predicted Kirby to be in the lead, which didn't get anything, and then herself to be at the bottom, which didn't get anything. So the final scores are in last place with 0 points. Mary in third place with 11 points. Andy in second place with 15 points. Debbie and the winner this week with 20 points. Kirby.
I did again because of a weird story.
Splendid, isn't it? Yes, splendid. Right, Debbie.
Faster.
Yes?
Faster?
Yes?
Do we have sponsors?
Not at the moment, because I want to do the news.
Oh.
You lot are rubbish, aren't you? It's got to be said. Right, news.
Well, thank you.
Before we move on to news, I have had some correspondences with the chap who's organising the Isle of Wight Comic Con. There's some potentially very exciting Doctor Who guests coming, but I'm not allowed to mention who they are.
Aww.
And talking about the exclusive we had on a previous episode of the show, which I nearly blabbed, because Doctor Who Online had the news on their webpage, and I thought, oh, it's out, but it wasn't, so I had to take it off very quickly.
Yes, but. I'd seen that when you said you weren't going to put it out. I was like, yeah, oh, no.
I know, but if you went to the Doctor, if you went to Doctor Who Online, part of that information was actually on their page, but there was only part of the information, as Seb told me, while giving me a punch in the face. In internet terms, but never mind. We got it all sorted out. I blamed you anyway, Deb. So.
Cheers. Yeah.
Right, Doctor Who news. Oh, I've got to. Thanks to you, Kirby. I've loaded up the wrong page.
I've got it.
What?
Thank you.
Right. So Deb, her favourite bit of this is doing the reading the sort of news sort of articles. But unfortunately, there's no series to read off now unless there's an update that we haven't done yet. But I think. No, we haven't. So we're not going to talk about that. What we're going to talk about is you lot haven't had a chance to talk about the passing of Deborah Watling, which particularly disappointed me because I never got a chance to meet her. Did any of you get the chance to meet Deborah Watling?
No.
Yes, I did. I did once.
And she came across some... because I saw her from a distance, from about 3 or 4 metres, actually, as quite a bubbly, sort of slightly eccentric woman. What was she like when you met her? No.
She was really good. She was really friendly, really affable. Liked her a lot, yeah.
Okay. But, yeah, as we did last time talk about, obviously, the fact we've had plenty of Deborah Watling to enjoy recently with all the Troughton stories that we've been watching, so... But there's some lovely tributes to her, actually, especially Fraser Hines on there. Can you see that little tribute there, Debbie? It says, "I found out about dear Debs. Loved her so much, R.I.P. Which is a very short, brief, but says quite a lot in those very few words. Apparently, Mark Gatiss's character is going to be probably playing a baddie, someone said. I don't know if this is actually true in the Christmas special.
I don't know if it's true. I'd heard that, yeah.
And he's going to be allegedly the new sort of foe for the Doctor.
I heard that he sort of was angling towards being another Time Lord.
Yes.
With a name of the character like that, possibly.
Yeah.
Except we all thought the landlord was going to be a Time Lord too.
It'd be quite interesting because obviously I don't think Gatiss was implying that he wasn't going to write much more for Doctor Who, wasn't he? So if he's going to be now returning to the show with no Sherlock in the pipeline and returning to the show and playing a regular character, I think that's almost a dream come true for him. He's done everything in Doctor Who nearly, apart from playing the Doctor himself. But exciting. We met him, but didn't we, Debbie? I've got a picture of us with him on my mantelpiece.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything on there? There's not been much news at all, is there, really? Oh, the Mr. Men characters.
How do you pronounce his name?
Who?
Bennett?
Huel Bennett died, yes.
Huel Bennett. Yeah.
He was only in Doctor Who for about 5 minutes in the chase, but he was quite a well-known character actor in the 70s on television. And you know, Shelley, I think, is the thing that sticks in mind that he was in...
Rinian the Iridian in The Death of Time, the second episode of the William Hartnell story, The Chase.
Yes, that was it. His Doctor Who life was that, but he's done lots and lots of things after that. So
I don't even remember what that character was. I'm going to have to Google it.
The Doctor Who men figurines have been announced to go with the Doctor men.
They look good.
Announced. I've already pre-ordered all of those.
I like to have all of them, but if they're £9.99 each, it's going to cost quite a lot of money to get all of them, so I might have to get them gradually.
Yeah, but I have quite a big obsession with Mr. Men and Doctor Who, so I'm quite happy.
I'd like to have them all, but I'd probably have to get them for Christmas, but I don't think She Must Be Obeyed would be entirely impressed with the idea of spending £130 on Mr. Men characters.
I might get you a couple. How about that?
I love the way you use "might" in that sentence. It's quite good.
Oh, I see. An Iridian is one of the fish type people from that episode.
Yes, it is, Kirby.
Ding.
Okay, whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Our long term sponsors have got a new Dalek oven glove, coming out soon, £6.99. I'd probably have to buy two because I've got two hands. Because it does say one oven glove supplied. But
two,
yes.
Two hands. Sorry.
DWM515 is still out. If you want to get that fairly direct from whowon.co.uk rather than if you're in America or elsewhere in the world, having to wait a little bit longer to get it.
When does the editor change? I remember they're getting a new editor.
Kirby.
I have no idea. Pending.
So I'm wondering if this is incorrect. It says Tom Spilsbury, editor for 515, and that may no longer be true.
It may or may not be. I don't know. Anyway, Lost Flame, which is an audiobook of the 12th Doctor, / 13th. It says Claire Higgins reads an exciting adventure for the 12th Doctor as played by Peter Capaldi. I wonder if Peter Capaldi himself has done any of these audiobooks for Doctor Who.
I hope so.
But I did rather enjoy Matt Smith and... Peter and David Tennant's readings. They're all quite good.
And you've got to admit, he's pretty good in the old Mercedes-Benz.
Yes. Galaxy 4 also coming out in 1999. Is that an audiobook? Yeah, it's novelization of it. Sorry, Andy. Web Affair, is Terence Dick's book. And that's about
Marcus Hearn doesn't start until 516.
Thank you for that. Doctor Who, sorry, the 12th Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver, a new version, is also coming out soon, £14.99. I'd like to have one of them because I like my Sonic Screwdrivers. And the Doctor Who Annual 2018. I suppose that have some comic adventures in it, and some people love comics, don't they? And there's also some Big Finish stories coming out. Blood Furnace, which is a 7th Doctor story, and Classic Doctor's New Monsters. Ooh, that sounds good. What's that? What is that?
What happened to Andy?
Don't know. He fell asleep, didn't he? He sounded like he's just about... Oh, sorry. You did. You were yawning, and I thought you were... I can't see you, so I thought you might have nodded off. Sorry.
No, I'm here.
Oh, good. That's good.
I'm here.
Excellent.
And Debbie's becoming... She's really in the dark tonight.
I know. She's a silhouette. She's a silhouette of her former self. High Price of Parking, which is... 7th Doctor Big Finish story, and Mavellian Grave. We talked about this last time. Andrew Smith, friend of the show. I'd like to get him back on, actually. I did ask who's that other writer, Toby Whithouse, if he'd come back on. He will do at some point. He's just going through a bit of a hard time at the moment. So thanks for saying you might come back. But Andrew Smith might come back on the show. He's a very nice chap, actually. I might ask him. Wrote Mavellian Grave, and he's heavily involved in Big Finish writing. He's a very, very nice man. Now we are 600, a book by James Goss, and Office That Never Was, another book by James Goss, a Torchwood story. So lots of items. I say who won our specialists in Doctor Who books, Target novels, etc., etc. So have a look at their website. Fantastic stuff, as Billy Kirkbride would say. Navazi.co.uk will very soon be having Christmas lines appearing on their website because we're heading towards the autumn. Yes, that's another word Americans can't say. Autumn. No, it's not fall. It's autumn. Yes, that's coming up very soon. But at the moment, they've still got last year's Christmas items on there, which is the hat and the scarf. And, of course, you can buy the trademark 4th Doctor long scarf, a shorter version of the long scarf, and the Series 18 scarf, which
similar
is
similar to the one that I'm currently wearing.
At £29 and 99p. Of course, you can also buy some cosplay items like the 5th Doctor's jumper, the Paisley items from the 7th Doctor, and that beautiful question mark tank top, which I love so much and hardly ever wear, because every time I wear it, it gets more bubbles on it and looks more worn out, so I don't wear it for that particular reason. All those items and many more, especially Star Trek stuff, and Sherlock, and just ordinary fashion stuff. Lavazi.co.uk. Have a browse, because you will find something there you like. It's great stuff. I did another little quote from Billy Kirkbride then, probably because I'm getting a bit tired. So, everybody, that was wonderful. Thank you very much. Next week, and I do mean next week, not definitely next week, but I do plan to, we'll be doing the Three Doctors.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Essentially, yes.
Right, well, I definitely cannot do next week because I've got a church to do one, so I'll get home in time.
So what have you got to say for yourself, Andy?
I've got a nice feedback.
Oh, no, you said it. So essentially, you did say for yourself.
Adam, when will you know if you can't do next week?
Oh, I don't know. I never know when I can't do it, because I always plan to do something, then something comes up at the last minute. But
I can do some audio feedback, but...
Yeah, that'd be nice, but... I think we will probably do it because it's a four-part story, and it's quite an easy one to watch. And I've probably already got some questions for it.
It's fun.
Yeah. So that's so if you could provide some feedback, that would be lovely. Thank you, Andy. So
how about the week after? What do you reckon? Do you know about that yet?
Week after? What is the week? Oh, that'll be Carnival of Monsters, won't it? Week after that.
Is that the bank? No, it's not the bank holiday weekend, is it? No.
No, no. I should be all right for that one.
Well, on the 20th, I cannot join you.
Hey, hang on. That's got to be worth the jingle.
I will be hanging with Tim Drury.
He doesn't like us.
Well, get him on the podcast. He likes me.
He may like you. He don't like me.
I'm seeing him next weekend.
Yeah, interesting. Because
Are you going to the Shada tour?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a fair way away, but it's not far where they used to live. I've done it a couple of times before, but also I see some of the staggerers as well. So there's like...
they don't like us either. Like,
when you see him, tell him you know me.
I think he probably knows that, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I've got him with Jim for years. I mean, I've been on his show before.
But at 2 in the afternoon, that's 7 p.m. your time on that Sunday, we're going to be driving him someplace. So we won't be on the podcast.
I know you'll be driving him somewhere. So probably to some sort of lunatic asylum. That's all where I'm going to end up at this rate. But yes, no, he doesn't like us, and who's the other one you? Oh, the staggerers, they don't like us either. So
he doesn't like us.
No, they don't.
Really?
No, he's never ever.
Right, in that case, I'll have a word with. Why do they like
he's never any provided us with any interaction, you know, sent us anything in or anything like that. Not like the Radio Rassilon boys. I got stuff from them years ago, and
I'll have a word with Tim and the Staggerers next weekend.
Yeah, many years ago. TARDIS Tavern. TARDIS Tavern has sent stuff in. Those all high and mighty podcasts aren't really interested in that. Right then.
I'll have a word with them the week after that.
Yeah, go on.
It won't make a difference then. Look, these high and mighty, long-running podcasts are not interested in us. They think we're amateur. Anyway, I've got some more stuff coming.
We are a long running podcast, in case you hadn't noticed.
Yeah, but they think we're amateur.
We do regular weeklies. Staggerers.
Try to do regular weeklies, but sometimes it doesn't work out.
Staggerers are fortnightly.
But
every summer we end up sort of having a few weeks here and there where we can't do anything.
Yeah, but every does it as well.
My point is, they think we're amateur. They're not interested in amateurs.
I'll have a word.
The Staggerers have a proper studio where they all get together and do it. Ooh, that
no,
sounds
it's
a bit rude.
Not. It's Adam's front room.
It's a studio.
It's not.
It's more of a studio than I've got anyway. Although I have.
It's exactly the same effect as you. It's a front bedroom in a house.
Yeah, but they get together physically. That sounds a bit rude, actually.
Because they all live in Crawley. I mean, if you're in the Crawley, you don't want to go there. You see, now we've got a better point because we're from all over the world and we get together.
I love the way you're trying to make excuses for these people.
I like the fact that Kirby's frozen in a perpetually bored looking.
He's not just disappeared. He's gone. We've lost Kirby. Kirby's gone.
My point is, they think that we're amateur because, I mean, I haven't got time to edit the show apart from when I really, really have to. I try to do it as a live production like you would if you'd actually doing a radio show. That's why I try not to blimmin' swear. And that's just the way I think it runs better, like that. Sometimes I will have to end up.
Adam, I'll have a word next weekend with them. I honestly do not believe they think that.
Yeah, but they really edit their show. All the other podcasts. I'm the only podcaster that doesn't generally edit the show.
You won't share, Adam.
That's because I'm ranting. Right.
Can you rant again, please? Didn't hear a word you said.
Good, because I'm changing the subject now. Right, Laurie Nick says, flirty... Oh, I've done that one, sorry. Alan T. Butcher says, I'd try for a Delgado... Oh, no, we talked about that one, didn't we? Ian Kirk said, a centre parting, who parted it? Moses? I think you're about Kirby. Alan T. Butcher said, Atlantis, New Atlantis. No, we've done that one. I did pick up an Ian Kirk's one then. I missed that one. Anyway,
according to Kirby, you're all froze.
Right, so I think we can finally end the show and I can get myself a drink and maybe a bath and maybe watch some of the many programmes I've got queued up on the Skybox for catch-up. So hopefully, fingers crossed, until next week, I'd like to thank our viewers for finally getting a chance to tune in on Facebook and our listeners for still putting up with us. Thank you for listening, watching to the show.
Yeah, thank you for putting up with us.
And Debbie will have to post a picture of her new hairdo. Bye!
See you then. Take care, folks. Bye, y'all.
But that's all banter, by the way, that stuff I come out with. But I still think, to a certain degree, they all look down on us to a certain degree.
Okay, Adam, let me have a chat with them next weekend to see what they really think.
Yeah, they probably think, ooh. Oh, that's that
no,
20
they,
megabyte.
No, they weren't. No,
those 20 megabyte are, amateurs, because... that's what I'd be thinking. Hang on, I've just got a moth. I think I killed it.
No, you just killed that moth.
Yeah.
You bastard.
The 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.